Anybody need some empowerment this morning? Anybody this morning that could use some spiritual principles to apply to your life so that you could be more powerful, so you can have more power over your life and over the things that are coming in your life sometimes that seem like an obstacle, but really are just an opportunity for God to work in your life? So I'm going to teach you a great principle this morning. Now the question is, will you apply it? And that's strictly up to you. See, I'm going to put out the word. I'm going to give you the advice. I'm going to give you the truth as the word reveals it. And I'm going to teach you a deep lesson that if you apply it, I promise you will change your life for the better. Want that this morning? Awesome. You can't wait to hear it, can you? All right, let's go. Beautiful. So we're going to turn to the book of Numbers this morning, chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. And this is a time, I want to give you the backdrop on this as you go there in your Bibles, if you are. And if not, I'm going to read it to you anyway, so that's fine. But needless to say, Numbers chapter 20 is a time, it's 39 years after the Israelites have left Egypt. And they're on the way to the promised land. But in the middle of all this, throughout the book of Numbers, we see that the Israelites very often lose faith. They don't realize that the promised land is right ahead of them, and they're on the way to it. Now, keep in mind, the journey would have only been 8 days, but it took them 40 years to get to the promised land. So if you think you're a little slow getting where you want to be, you're in good company. Some things do take more time. Now, what slowed them down, just so you know, is their lack of belief and faith in God. So always look at that. If you're struggling with something and not moving forward with your life, somehow, somewhere, you may not be bringing God into it or believing God can take you to the place that you're heading for. So just keep that in mind. And so Moses, in his ministry and in his leadership with Aaron, who was also a helper for him, they would often go through all these struggles throughout their journey of where the Israelites lost faith and trust in God, and very often complained that God wasn't doing enough. Now, I know none of us ever do that, and I know none of us ever say God is taking too long either. We never say things like that. We none of us ever say, come on, God, I asked you to change me, and let's get on it right now. I want it when? Now. I want to be changed now. I want my finances to be better. Now, right here, right now, exactly, right? We want a lot of things now. And the problem with our culture, even especially today, you can get a lot of things now, right? I mean, you could go on Amazon right now. I'm not telling you to do that. But if you did, if you search for a certain product, you can, and if you got Prime, and you say same-day delivery, it'll be at your house by the time you get home from church. Right? You can order everything right online, boom, and it's there when? Now. Now, sometimes God is a now God, and sometimes God is a wait God. And part of the reason we sometimes have to wait is there's something we need to be prepared for what it is in the future that we're going to receive. I mean, think about it this way. We have some beautiful young children in our church, right? And lovely Noah, he goes around every Sunday begging and asking and pleading and smiling at you and putting that little basket right in your face to say, give me some change for change so we can help bring change in people's lives, right? Little Noah gets to do that, right? And he does such a beautiful job at that, doesn't he? But just think about that. Now, if we were to ask him to, for example, fix the roof on the church, he would try, right? Godly knows that his parents aren't going, please stop right here. His grandparents are going, no, wait. Do you kind of think that maybe Noah needs a little bit of training and knowledge and wisdom before he gets there to do that, right? Now, we know he can raise funds for the roof, right? God might be rearing him up to be a fundraiser in the future, right? Because he can go around with his little basket with those sheepish eyes and say, well, you give to God, right? So maybe that's where God's preparing him for the future, right? But see, all of us, we sometimes want to be ahead of God, don't we? We're not quite mature enough, spiritually speaking, to be where we could be or God means for us to be later, right? And so sometimes in the preparation stage, that's the time when we have disappointments and discouragements and things aren't happening in the now. We're waiting, we're growing, we're maturing, spiritually speaking, to get us ready for what? The promised land, right? So that's what that's what Moses' ministry was about. It was constantly dealing with his congregation, if you will, trying to help them believe more in God. And Moses performed all kinds of miracles right before their very eyes all the time. Manna from heaven, right? The quails, you name it. God did all kinds of miracles to prove to the people that God was real and God would take care of them, whether they were in the wilderness for 40 years or when they got to the promised land. Because sometimes a promised land isn't a better place necessarily. Sometimes it's in the desert where we get the most learnings to prepare us for something greater. Because, you know, the greater, higher you go, spiritually speaking, or in maturity, or anywhere in your life, the higher you go, the greater the responsibility. You better be prepared for what's going to be there, right? Right? We need knowledge and wisdom for that. That's what spiritual maturity is all about. So in chapter 20, we see a time, it's the 39th year. They got one more year to go. They're almost there. They're right at the edge of where God's going to take them into the promised land. And here's what transpires. We're going to go to Numbers chapter 20. Whew, all right. I'll get there in a second, I think. All right. In the early spring, the people of Israel arrived in the wilderness of Zin and camped at Kadesh. While they were there, Miriam died and was buried. Miriam was Moses' sister. So there's something. She's not going to make it into the promised land. She passes away. There was no water for the people to drink at that place. So what did they do? How did you know that? How did you know that they're going to complain? When you're on your journey and you're going through life and you get somewhere, you're almost to the next place, right? What's sometimes the thing that we do on the way going? We start to complain, right? You're almost there. You're getting worn out. It's done it a long time. You've been exercising or whatever it is. You've got a goal. It might be, you know, to change your physicality or something. And all of a sudden, you're almost there. But what happens? You're not there yet. And so you get a little bit discouraged and or impatient. And so you start to complain, right? And this is what the Israelites were known for. By the way, the reason they were even in the wilderness all this time was that when the spies went into the promised land and came back, remember Joshua and Caleb had a positive response? It's going to be great there. The other spies said, oh, we don't want to go there. And so that negativity is still prevalent in all of us all the time and around us. So we have to be cautious for that. Because even though there was no water there, now, if God had done all kinds of miracles in your life, as he did in the lives of the Israelites, when you knew there was no water, what do you think you would do as a Christian person today? One would complain, one would ask God. What about the other 99 sheep? Somebody's going to go looking for water. They're going to solve it themselves. I'll go out and find myself a spring, right? I'll go ask the neighbors for some water. Maybe they have water. They're going to figure it out for yourself, aren't you? Very nice. So we got three responses so far. So what we see the Israelites do is they rebelled against Moses and Aaron. Perfect. Let's blame the leaders. It's all their fault that they brought us to this place and there's no water. They should be getting us some water, and they better hightail it into town and find some water for us. You see the problem with a codependent, dysfunctional congregation? What have these Israelites learned in 39 years? Not much. Blame, when all else fails, if you can't blame God, blame the leaders. It's got to be their fault, right? All right, so this is what they say. The people blame Moses and said, We wish we had died in the Lord's presence with our brothers. We wish we died in Egypt. Did you bring the Lord's people into this wilderness to die along with all of our livestock? This land has no grain, no figs, no grapes, no pomegranates, and there's no water to drink. What's the big idea of bringing us here, Moses? And you, Aaron, you're not much better. They're ticked off people. They complain what they don't have. What do these Israelites have? Let's forget them for a second. Forget about them because we're nothing like them. So consequently, what do we have? What do we have, folks, in this church? What do we have as a people? We have faith in God, right? We have a God who can do the impossible, right? Remember, Moses and Aaron, they hadn't seen Jesus rise from the dead. They didn't see the miracles Jesus did. They knew nothing of Jesus yet. They only were trying to get from one city to another. They were trying to go from one bad place and circumstance in their life where they were oppressed and beaten down and hurt and harmed. They wanted to get to a better place. That's all they cared about. And all they cared about was what? The physical. The physical. There's no grapes. There's no pomegranates. There's no water. There's nothing physically here to nourish me. You see what they're missing the boat on the most? What do we need more than anything, church? Faith in God. Trust in God. The presence of God. A belief in God. We don't need physical things to be happy, do we? Say no. No, we don't. In our culture today, you would think you did, because there's so many things you don't have. Take it from a person that sells Mercedes-Benz. $300,000 cars where rich people walk in and they go, well, my $200,000 car isn't good enough. I need a $300,000 one. When some of us are driving $15,000 ones or $2,000, why? I mean, what's a car? Transportation, just in case you didn't know. Point A to point B. Now, yes, I prefer to get there in a better way, of course. It's okay to have nice things, but that nice thing can't have you. You see the difference, right? In our culture today, we're taught that if we're not thin enough, rich enough, smart enough, whatever enough, we're not enough. And that's, we got to be careful, church, of buying into that culture. Right? We have a roof over our head. We have food to eat. We have people that will help us provide food. We have a God who will heal us and restore us. But more than anything, we have a God who loves us. Right? If you have love of God and love of others, you have everything. Everything. But see, the Israelites and many of us sometimes, we lose sight of that. We don't count our blessings. We count what's missing. And that's what the Israelites' problems were. So what do? They attack the leaders. They wish they were dead instead. What? How many of you have moved in your life in some way, shape, or form, spiritually speaking, to a better place? Most of you have grown here, right? If not all of you, right? And you're going to continue to grow because you're in the church of spiritual enrichment and growth. We're here to grow. And some of that growth hurts. I hate to tell you this because sometimes you get pruned. Cut some things out of your life. And sometimes I have to help cut some things out of your life to say, stop focusing so much on the physical things that God can do for you. Think about just loving God and God loving you. And let that be enough, right? We all have to stop complaining. And especially complaining to the leaders. Verse 6. I got to keep going, church. I told you I'm going to teach you something really deep, right? Something really that you can apply to your life. I guess I'm teaching you more than one thing. The first thing is this. Always, always put God first in your life and find whatever God gives you, be grateful for it. Let me put it that way. Whatever it is you have and you have life, that's enough. And if you have God's love, you have more than all of you need, right? And God will sustain you with that. Do you know that God loves you? Beautiful. Okay, good. I just want to make sure. All right, beautiful. Verse 6. Moses and Aaron turned away from the people and went to the entrance of the tabernacle. See, when those people were complaining, what did Moses and Aaron do? Did they complain back? Did they yell back at the people? Sometimes leaders want to. Oh, but they didn't. They turned away from what the people were saying. See, words have power. And sometimes we as leaders and we as Christians can let other people's words affect us, can't they? And we can make somebody else's complaint our problem, like we have to fix it. We're not here to fix your problems, just in case you didn't know that. God, only God can. And here's the other side of that. Moses and Aaron, they knew that they could not solve the people's problems, right? So where did they go? Back to God. So they left the people, let them complain, do what they wanted to do. They kind of blew it all off, so to speak. And I'm sure while they were gone, the people kept complaining about, well, where did they go? They took off on us. Where's the water? Right? Can you just imagine that, how human beings can be? I know none of you are like that, but there are people like that. So they fell down, face down on the ground, right before God. They started to pray to God, didn't they? See, whenever we sometimes get lost, or you get lost, or any of us get lost, in the complaint stage of our life, the first place we need to go is face down before the Lord, and to repent, and to change our minds, and to ask God's forgiveness. God, forgive me for complaining so much about all I don't have when I have so much, right? We have to change that in our mindset. Because the thing about complaining is the more you complain, the more you complain. Because there's always something to complain about, isn't there? Yeah, okay. You're not complaining about the sermon at all, but I know that. While they were face down, the presence of the Lord appeared to them. And the Lord said to Moses, "You and Aaron must take the staff and assemble the entire community. As the people watch, command the rock over there to pour out its water. You will get enough water from the rock to satisfy all the people and their livestock." Isn't it good to know that when people are thirsty, God says, "I've got a way to solve that," right? And he gives Moses specific instructions as to how to make that happen. He says to Moses, "Go command the rock to give water." What does that teach us about what our words can do? They're very powerful. See, words of complaint are powerful too, because they create in us a sense of ingratitude, a sense of loss, a sense of not enough, and all those negative things, right? What our words can do through complaining can create a really bad attitude for us, can it? And those around us, right? But also words, if we speak to the rock and say, "Give me water," it can also do that, can it? Huh? What'd she say? Can it? "You will get enough water from the rock to satisfy all the people and their livestock." So Moses did as he was told. He took the staff from the place where it was kept before the Lord. Then he and Aaron summoned the people to come together and gather at the rock. "Listen, you rebels," he shouted. Not exactly pastoral right there. What happened to Moses from the time he laid before God, asking God to help save his people and give them water, to the time he sees the people again? His attitude shifted ever so slightly. He's about fed up with these people. You see how attitudes towards others is a problem sometimes for us. And even if you're around a complainer, doesn't mean they become your enemy and you don't retaliate back at them like our friend Moses does here. In fact, Moses gets so upset, he says, "Must we bring you water from this rock? Am I going to do one more thing for you, you chronic complainers?" See how nasty he is to the people he's leading to the promised land? What a great spiritual leader this man is. He's having a bad day, poor Moses. Then he raised his hand and struck the rock twice with the staff. What did God tell Moses to do? Command the rock to give water. What does Moses do in his anger towards the people? Bam, bam, twice. And he hit it so hard, the rock split open and water gushed out. He made sure he got water out of that rock one way, shape, or form. He probably was imagining bashing their heads while he was whacking the rock. These complainers, I can't stand them. So all the people in their livestock drank their fill. So they got what they wanted. They got their water. Verse 12. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust me enough to demonstrate my holiness to the people of Israel, you will not lead them into the land I am giving them. Moses never made it to the promised land. His greatest sin, as we can study it sometimes, I look at it as he had put up with these people for 39 years. That one thing that, whatever reason, he lost his trust and his faith in God, and he got so angry at the people that God could not allow him to lead them any further. This was his Achilles heel, if you will, in his leadership ability. Joshua, on the other hand, had a different mind and spirit. Now, here's the other side of it. Moses was also trapped in the physicalness of giving people what they needed. He could have taught them a much deeper Christian or spiritual value and lesson. He could have taught the people that what you say, whatever you say, has power. And there's power in your words. And that if we command to the rock for it to come open, God, not we, not I, not you, right? Not the leaders, cause the water to come out. But he did a physical thing instead, because he did something practical and he did something human, and he wasn't relying on God. So that type of leader cannot lead people into a promised land, part of which because they were complainers and he was complaining about them too. He wasn't showing true leadership. That what our words are really matter. And even though people complain about you or to you, you don't retaliate against them. And even if you give them what they want and you do it with the wrong spirit, that's not God's spirit at all serving, is it? Whatever we say does matter. Whatever you say to yourself and to others, and particularly about God to others, has impact. And the way you feel towards somebody else that you're leading or helping or serving or whatever, in their humanness, your reaction to them by what you say back to them, by calling them names like rebels, is not the sign of a strong Christian leader. And all of us are Christian leaders, are we not? All of us are. How we serve others by how we give to them, you have to love the people you're serving. And you don't just meet their physical needs. What's more important? Spiritual needs. So spiritual leadership is this. In the book of Mark, we see Jesus. And there, see, these two stories connect together. That's why I put them together this morning. In the book of Mark, Jesus is walking with his disciples. And he sees a fig tree that isn't giving off figs. And he curses the fig tree. And he says to it, may you never grow figs again. And the next day, the disciples walk by. And Peter says to Jesus, hey, that fig tree that you spoke to, it's dried up. Do you see the power of words? Do you see how easy it is by what you curse for it to dry up in your life? Look at it this way. If you don't speak good about yourself or others, it's like cursing them. And it can dry up a relationship that you have with somebody else or yourself. If some of you don't like your body the way it's shaped with your extra little whatevers, love it anyway. See, when we start to curse this little bit of overlap I have here, could you coo? It took some good home-cooked meals. I have a wonderful wife that can cook awesomely. But see, cursing it doesn't change it. It causes it perhaps to become sick. There's power in your words. There's power in your words. Here's how I know that, because the disciples heard him say it. I'm in Mark chapter 11, verse 14. And I'm going to jump down to verse 20. The next morning, as they passed by the fig tree he had cursed, the disciples noticed it was withered from the roots. Peter remembered what Jesus had said. Said. Can you say said? To the tree. What you say about yourself or others or your life or your situation or anything, if you say I'm poor, guess what? You become poorer. Sometimes physically, sometimes spiritually, sometimes otherwise. Our words have power. Be careful what you're saying. Be careful. Why I say that is this. Look, teacher, the fig tree you cursed has withered. Then Jesus said to his disciples, have faith in God. What did Moses have to teach the people? Have faith in God. What am I trying to teach you this morning? Have faith in God. No matter what's dried up in your life, no matter if you're desperate for anything or everything, no matter if water's not flowing in your life or finances aren't flowing or whatever's not flowing in your life, stop cursing your life, but instead have faith in God that God can provide exactly what you need. Have faith in God. I assure you that you can say to this mountain, may God lift you up and throw you into the sea, and your command will be obeyed. Remember, God said to Moses, do what? Command the rock to be opened. Remember when Jesus called Lazarus out of the tomb? He commanded Lazarus to come out. When Jesus was raised from the dead, God commanded that that tomb would be brought open, and Jesus would come out. I want to give you power this morning. It's going to come in a couple of ways. The first way is for you to always have faith in God. This, more than two. The second way, I can't count. The second way is for you to stop complaining about what you don't have. And that's even those of us in this church. We have an awesome church. There's some things we don't have. That God will provide, right? But in the meantime, we love this church, don't we? And we love all the people in it, don't we? Including the leaders. Yes, right. Yes, see, there you go. So, and whatever it is in your life that you have a problem area, stop complaining about it. Start speaking to it instead. Command it to leave. Anybody in this room have something in their life they need out of their life? Remember it said here? It said here, may God, here I assure you, that you can say to this mountain, may God lift you up and throw you into the sea and your command will be obeyed. All that's required is that you really believe and do not doubt. See, Moses had a problem. He doubted. He was so afraid of what the people that they were going to get him because he wasn't so sure he could get water out of that rock. He had done it before, way back earlier, like about 20 years earlier, but he wasn't sure this time. And he got caught up in the complaining, didn't he? And then he suddenly realized, I better whack the rock. That's the way I did it the last time. Although sometimes the last way we did something is not the way God is asking us to do it this time. Right? And God is very clear to command it. And look at here, verse 24. Listen to me, Jesus says. You can pray for anything, and if you believe, you will have it. But here's a caveat. This one you may or may not really like as part of how you get something that you've asked for in prayer. Are you ready for the next verse? I'm going to teach you something really strong here. But when you are praying, first, forgive anyone you are holding a grudge against, so that your Father in heaven will forgive you. Sometimes in our prayer life, we wonder why God is taking so long to do something. And sometimes we think we're waiting for God to act, and sometimes God is preparing us. But you know what God has to prepare us the most? Our heart. We cannot move into a better place or a greater place of spiritual awareness and growth and change and to be a better person, spiritually speaking, if we hold grudges against others. Do you see how that grudge that Moses had against his people, how it stopped him from getting to the promised land? He didn't, you know, when he left that prayer time, if he'd gone back to his people and said, you know, we've had a rough 39 years together, but I know God will see us through, and I know you've been complaining, but let's all pray together, and I forgive you for yelling at me and saying I'm a bad leader. Might have had a different outcome, don't you think? Might have changed some of the hearts of the people, right? And this is what Jesus is teaching as well. Sometimes when we're trying to move forward to something greater, we're carrying that grudge. Anybody ever carried a grudge before? Is anybody else besides me Italian? And, you know, it kind of goes with our culture, I must say. You learn that. We learn that very young. Do you know how heavy a grudge is? You ever seen one? You kind of hope I have one, right? Back here I could carry and... See, grudges are so heavy, they couldn't fit in this room. See, Jesus teaches a very deep Christian or spiritual value and principle. When we can say to the mountain, move, it'll move. When you say, I forgive you to someone, see how that moves a mountain? Some of you have walls that you've built between you and others, right? And some others have built walls against you, right? Forgiveness is what takes down the wall. So I guess I want to end with this to teach you something of value. I was going to empower you this morning, right? I want to empower you with the understanding that whatever you say matters. And whenever you say, God help me, God hears you. Whenever you say, I believe God will help us, God will. Whenever you say, forgive them, they don't know what they're doing. They're just human like I am. But God, bless them anyway. Give them water of your spirit of forgiveness and grace and mercy. Bless them, God. When you say words like that into your life and into the lives of the people that you love, things change. And water gushes out and satisfies people's souls more than anything. So as we end now this morning, I'm going to give you some directions. One, stop complaining. You got that one? Including complaining about yourself. Two, when you want something, ask God for it. But more importantly, expect God to do it for you and wait on God and God's way to give it to you. Take responsibility. Don't blame others for the fact that you don't have what you don't have. Take responsibility in this. Maybe I don't have enough. I don't believe God will give it to me. So that's really my prayer. Don't give it to me, God, because I don't deserve it. So God says, okay, I won't. Whatever we say becomes real and true for us. And if people get on your nerves, I know that every once in a while, I know none of that happens to any of you, but if it were to happen, forgive them. Don't retaliate against them. Don't make matters worse. Don't fight fire with fire. Fight fire with water. Put out the flames with peace. Pray for them. Forgive them. And then whatever it is in your life that you want to see changed, speak to it and tell it. My God will move you out of the way, and have faith and trust that God will. Amen.